Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
From the hills of Strawberry Canyon, I'm Coin Dang, and this is the Golden Bear Cast. Let's go. Go Bears.
And welcome back to another episode of the California Golden Bear Cast, part of Blue Wire Podcast Network. It is Wednesday, October 20th, 3 days after, 4 days, technically, after the Oregon loss. It was right there in our grasp, but we let it slip away.
Damn, that sounded like it hurt. That was real hurt right there.
It was pain. I didn't get my hopes up until the last like 2 minutes of the game, and I was like, oh my god, we're gonna do this, aren't we? And then it just all came crashing down. But I'm one of your co-hosts, Rob. Alongside me, of course, is my other co-host, Andy. Andy, how are you feeling after days, as I open up a LaCroix to drown my sorrows?
Wow. Not the fact that that's not an alcoholic drink, it's a problem. I feel all right. This is one of those games where I was absent. and I got to watch on replay because I was really with no service in the middle of nowhere. I've done that more this year, I found. But
twice.
I think I was...
Twice?
Twice. But on the Washington game, I came out from that magical place. This time, I was like, nah, I'm going to stay.
Wasn't worth it.
It's just more the same. You know, it's tough. And I just sort of... I honestly just looked at this and was like, forget it. Let's just dust it off and move forward. But what about you? Where are you at?
For me, like, I see, moral victories are like a weird conundrum for me, but this felt like a moral victory win. Like, this felt like a, okay, our defense might have turned the corner, barring from like maybe one or two drives where we kind of were gassed and a little lackadaisical. But outside of that, I thought the defense performed well. Granted, the one drive that they didn't perform well in was the go-ahead touchdown. So there is that. But overall, like, to hold Oregon to under like 27 and to do it in that fashion up there in Autzen. And then the offense, like, doing pretty well up until the second half, in which they kind of just started to crumble. But I don't even think we need to go through the stats. I think we just need to kind of flesh this game out. There are some questions from fans and listeners that we kind of all kind of throw in there as our guiding principles through this conversation. But talk me through it. Talk me through how you process this victory, like what to take away from it, what not to take away from it. What are you angry about? What are you not angry about? Whatever you want to talk about, Andy. The floor is yours.
Wasn't Sid at this game?
I'm sure she was. No, isn't she graduated?
No, I think she was there. I think she went. So, for me, something that's really fun to do is to watch the Wilcox post-game press conference and then watch the one on Tuesday.
Yeah.
It's a different human being. But I don't know. What are we going to call this? The Broken Record Podcast? I'm just going to come up here and say the same thing over and over and over again. I just like walked away from it. Was like, good. We played a competitive football game. That's what I expected we would do. We had the opportunity to win. And time again, we don't win these games. I'm going to try and say this as vaguely as I possibly can because I don't want this to become a platform where I'm doing anything which would be the opposite of what I'm going to try and do. But at some point, guys, we've blamed everyone we could possibly blame. Right? Haven't we? I think we've blamed every single, except one particular region we don't go after. And so for me, I'm just like, all right, it's going to be what it's going to be this year. This year is going to be what it's going to be. We might play close with Oregon. It's going to rain in the Bay Area in the next few days leading up to the game here against Colorado. I expect it to be a game. The one thing that I'm thinking about as we look forward is, can we establish a ground game that we believe in by a force of God?
Divine right? intervention is Divine what you're looking for.
Intervention might lead to our offensive coaches realizing what Nam's been tweeting about all week, which is that our yards per carry is actually really good, but he just wishes our coaches would understand that. The disappearance of the offensive line is the most fundamental concerning thing for me about this team, period, full stop. It's not the defense. It's not the rest of the offense. It's the offensive line. Disastrous performance against Washington State, and then you're going to go up against Kayvon and expect you're going to expect, I wasn't going to try and pronounce it. I was like Tibbs, and then you're going to go up against Oregon's athletes and do better. I mean, like, there, I think there's real concern around Angus McClure's job security. That unit looks bad. And that's been the knock, I feel like, against him. Good recruiter, less good coach. What do we have this year? It's tough. It's tough to watch. But the big thing, I think, as I look at this game, so I want to take the first point that I made, right? Which is, we've blamed everybody else, but we don't blame one large area. And then I want to take Wilcox's press conference and isolate one thing he said. Okay. Fourth down play. He goes and's like, we knew exactly what they were going to run. They were going to run cover zero. Right? That's what he said?
Yeah.
Okay. Then he says, we had the play called for them to run that.
To beat right? the cover zero.
Yes.
Yeah.
And he said, we didn't execute.
Yeah.
All right. That's it. That's it. He's saying it, guys. Like, he's saying the same thing. Like, you have to have people that are going to execute the plays when we just don't execute the damn plays. And if we're practicing well, then we don't have people that show up in games. I don't know. Like, for me, it starts to become, it's the same thing that Pavlovich said about the Giants 3 years ago. We went through the same thing. The Giants couldn't hit homers. Remember this team? Could not hit homers. Mm-hmm. They won a lot of World Series that way, but they couldn't hit any damn homers. Baseball had evolved, had changed, and they wanted to move towards that. They were trying to move towards that. They changed hitting coaches every single year. They would change out the hitting coach, change the assistant hitting coach, change the bench coach, move the bench coach to the third base coach. And finally, Pavlovich was like, I was either Pavlovich or Shulman. You can change the coaches as much as you want, but when do you start to look at another direction? And so for me, like, that's the way I look at this. It's a frustrating loss on top of frustrating losses. And these frustrations have come under what I would say is largely a consistent group. So for me, I'm excited for something new. Wilcox, he's not going anywhere. He has $16 million buyout.
No. It's crazy. It's closer to seven.
Oh, I thought that was wrong. I was like, that was insane.
Yeah.
So $7 million buyout. He's not going anywhere. Expect us to win maybe two, three more games this year. And then I'm going into next year with a new quarterback.
Hopefully.
And why can Chase stay?
Chase can't stay, yeah. He still has an extra year of eligibility.
Okay, so we're not going into next year with a new quarterback. But you go into next year with, and you look at that and you say, okay, we're going in with a different unit. And what can you, I mean, like, that's the only thing I can bring myself to look at. I'm rambling. Rob, where am I at? Insane, rambling, lost. I didn't get much sleep last night. Like, where are we at?
I think it's all of it. It's all of it combined, right? I mean, so here's my thing about what you were trying to say without trying to say it is as guys like you and I, like, we start off as fans, right? And we still kind of are. But we've evolved into this thing of, like, we're slightly more analytical when it comes to this and a little bit more rational. We're not as irrational as we used to be, probably, mm-hmm. after years of doing this and writing and how to watch a game, right? You've definitely probably see things now that you probably weren't seeing, like, 3-4 years ago. I definitely am seeing things that I didn't used to see 3-4 years ago. But that all being said, like, when you look at a thing like this and you try and pinpoint, like, what exactly went wrong or who exactly is really to blame here, there isn't a one, like, clean-cut answer, right? Because the dichotomy of, like, how a football game or any sports game works is, yeah, you can blame the manager or the coach who is supposed to prep these players, but the players are the ones that are on the field executing the preparation. So we can blame the preparation, but then at the same time, we don't know what that preparation is like, so we can't fully blame the coaches. And we go out there and we see the players execute, and, like, especially collegiate, it's this weird relationship, right? Like, we don't want to blame the college athlete. Like, we just don't want to blame the 18 to 22-year-olds that are on the field playing for the university. We don't want to do it. Like, it's taboo, and we try to steer away from it. We don't want to become that fan base that does it. But at least from an analytical standpoint and how we rationally look at a game, we should be able to separate that and look at the on-field product of what's going on and saying, that's the right play call. That player has to make that catch. That player has to make that throw. That player has to make that block. Like, I think that's fairly within reason. 100% within reason. Where you go after players and saying, like, ah, you suck, you shouldn't even be at this university, like, that type of stuff. No, that's way, way crossing the line. But analyzing directly what is on the field happening, like, I'm not going to go out and say, like, oh, he's probably one of those guys that doesn't practice hard during the week. Like, he thinks he can just game it out. No, you don't go after character. You go after the actual numbers and what you see on the field with your eyes and how it's being played out. So I do think that is a valid question and concern. And then my devil's advocate point to you would be, if the players aren't executing, isn't it the coach's decisions to make the changes necessary to find players that can execute?
Right. That I think is a fantastic segue into something that I've been thinking about, which is, let's, you know, you listeners of this podcast, let's put ourselves in the position of thinking about, what would you do as a head coach in this position? You're 1-5. The season is largely a wash. Mm-hmm. Your job is relatively safe outside of a complete tank in the last 7 games. No, there's not that many left.
Six
games. Okay. So do you throw in, for me, I know where I'm at. I'm like, I want to see younger guys. I'm like, I just feel like I'm ready to see what else it is and to explore what that's like. And we're doing it on defense.
Yeah.
But we don't do it on the offensive side of the ball. And that's really where, like, if you told me that I had to burn Kai's red shirt, I'd probably do it. And I think that might be that's probably a pretty far out take. I might get some flack
judging
for that one.
He's not even on the depth chart, like, over the last 7 weeks. Yeah.
But, like, and I miss Jaden Casey. I miss Jaden Casey. And I don't know what Jaden Casey's going to be, but I miss having him on this roster. But for me, there's excitement in just rebuilding and retooling. And maybe it's just because I went through this as a Giants fan. We rebuilt for 3 years. You know, maybe call it two plus. But we put that mindset on and said, we're going to rebuild. The nice thing about college football is you don't have to wait that long.
Yeah.
You don't need to rebuild over the course of 3 or 4 years. You can rebuild in over the course of one and a half seasons. And so why do I want to rebuild? Why do I want to reset? Because I've been watching the same damn thing for like 4 straight years. And it's like, all right, this game was like everyone, we've all seen this game before. We've all seen it. We've seen it this season. We've seen it last season. And we saw it the season before that. And we win some of them. We lose some of them. But we want something more. And we've seen the same thing. We've seen the same offense. We've seen two different offensive coordinators, but produce very similar results. The only difference, I would say, between Bill Musgrave and Bo Baldwin is that we have a better run game now. Slightly more use of the tight end. Other than that, I mean, look, route concepts, what we're doing, different. Production-wise, I look at it and I'm like, it largely feels the same. We have good drives where we put everything together, and we have drives where we completely turtle up. And it's not a turtle because we're scared. It's just we turtle up because that's what we do. We just fold into like the Mario character turtle, and we get kicked to the opposite direction and we punt. And I feel like we do that so often, and we see it so often. We'll have a great first quarter drive. We score the touchdown, and then the second quarter is a total miss. What game is that? Oh, it's the Nevada game, right? Oh, okay. So then we have great long sustained drives in the third quarter. In the fourth quarter, we disappear. It's like, what game is that? Probably three other games this year. Like, and then we have the games where we don't do anything, and then we have in the third quarter, we do nothing. In the fourth quarter, we have a massive amount of success, but it's almost too little too late. So I just feel like at this point, it's become so predictable that I'm almost going back to what I would say with McElwain, where I was like, let's introduce the anarchy.
You want to see chaos.
Because it's different. And because it helps us understand what else is out there, because that in turn would then help me to understand what the limit is on this thing. And I think that's what I'm trying to get a better understanding of is this just who we are, a team that cannot score 24 points consistently, or are we limited in some degree that we have control over? Because if you told me that it was the latter, I would maintain and then build upon my confidence that this ship would get righted. If it's not, then it would allow me to understand that path might be very hard. Okay, so round two of my very hot rambling take. What do you think?
No, I think the point you're hitting on is a very good, like, full circle moment of our conversation that we had with Nam and Nick, right? I think that's the crux of where Nam and Nick are on the spectrum and where you and I are on the spectrum. Nam and Nick, or let's talk about us first. I think you and I are on the spectrum of we know what the ceiling is with this team currently. We're willing to see out what the ceiling looks like with that next team, which is coming next year and the year after that. You and I are okay with that, and we're good with it, and we're hopeful for it. Nam and Nick, I think, on the other hand, I'm speaking for them, but I think this is where their point is, like generally, is that they think regardless of who changes and who comes in at other positions, the ceiling will ultimately be the same with the current team we have now. And that's the differing point. For me, I'm on board with you. So I was talking to this in our Ride for California guys is our group chat. And what I was saying was, I honestly think like if statistically, like numerically, we're out of the running for a bowl game, right? The moment we cannot get to 6 wins, you throw all the young guys in. Why would you not? like, why are you trying? I mean, I guess you're trying to win because, you know, it's you're trying to get the W, but like, there's no reason for you to try and get those wins. You need to build for next year.
Yeah.
Right. Getting the five wins isn't meaningful to you at all. This isn't a program where we just change our head coach and we just need to get wins to get some momentum. This is a team that needs to start getting experience for guys on the field immediately. Like, does Chase give us the best chance of winning? Absolutely. But the moment six wins is out the door.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
You need to put in someone younger. Like, just to see what that kid can do on the field in a real game, right? There's no other opportunity to do that. Garbage time is not the same as giving a guy a four-game run to end the season in a shot season anyways. Plus, if
as a starter in practice.
Exactly.
I totally agree.
It's totally different. So I think you're playing. I think Wilcox is playing for the six wins right now, as he should be, right? I don't think he should tank the whole year. You go for the six wins. If you can string off five more wins out of the last six games, you're getting to a bowl game, then good. You made the right choice. But the moment you're mathematically out of it, you need to start just putting in the younger guys because the older guys aren't here. I mean, what's the point of playing the older guys? And like, I get you're trying to give them, you know, the play time and, you know, this might be their last go around in college football, but that's negligence to your program if you're not building towards the future. Right. And the only way you do that is getting guys playing time and not just practice, but like actual live reps. And like, to your point, like we've done that with the defense, right? Femi's been playing, Lou's been playing. I mean, Colin Gamble is still a young dude too. So Colin's been playing. You see all the other young guys across the front seven as well that are.
I feel like we discover a surprise defensive player like Bimage every year.
Right, but Bimage isn't a freshman, though.
No, I know.
Yeah. But I get
your
point.
I'm just saying.
Like, Trey Pastor played really well against Oregon.
Right.
Femi played really well against Oregon. Those are two inside linebackers that have just... That's case in point to what I'm trying to say. There's nothing like in-game experience to see whether they can sink or swim. And clearly some of these guys are swimming. So why aren't we doing that on the offense? I don't know. I mean, I guess you could say that they're doing that with Jeremiah Hunter. And they're doing that a bit with Damian Moore, too. But, I mean, all in all, like, I'm looking at this going, you got to start playing the younger guys at some point, and I think that will be the crux of the art, that little moment. Like, this is not a good example, but I'm going to do it anyways. I'm prefacing that. Like, the whole Ed Orgeron thing right now, it's like, he's gone, but he's coaching till the end of the year. Like, what does that accomplish in like any sort of form? Like, what does that accomplish? He's a dead man walking on campus. Like, he's gone at the end of the year. You think the dude's going to be out recruiting for LSU? No, of course not. Like, is he like, how do you know he's going to be doing his best job? But that's Ed Orgeron. But that's kind of, that's the same generic scenario I'm building off of, is you play, you know, some of the senior guys the last five games meaninglessly, because it's not going to get us to a bowl game or anything. It's just literal, just normal. You could call it exhibition games and it wouldn't really matter. The younger guys, though, could potentially use that to build on in going into next year, right? And if you're not putting guys, I mean, the coaches have talked about this all the time, right? It's like preparation, like it starts with them and they need to identify like who plays and like who is going to elevate this team and putting the team in the best position to win. And if you're not looking ahead to next season without a bowl game in hand and you're not playing the younger guys and not seeing, then what are you doing is what I would ask.
Right. And that's what we did under Dykes.
Right.
We did that on our way to a 5-7 season. And we came into the next year with zero idea who would be a starting quarterback or even who to look to.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had to figure out, was it Bowers, was it Garbers, right? That was that entire battle.
Yeah, but then he left or he was let go. So
I think it's really well said. I thought of the player I thought of was like Nate Richin. Like the inside linebackers are actually a really good example mm-hmm. of that. Yeah. Nate Richin, right? Against Washington State.
That interception. Very good play.
And, you know, and then didn't play against Oregon. Like we rotate really well defensively to find what works. And I don't feel like we do that. And there are plays that, like, okay. Perfect example of the, here's what frustrates me about the offensive side of the ball.
Ooh.
We have had turnovers in the last 2 weeks that would have flipped game script, but we don't do anything with them.
Right.
The amount of empty possessions we have after a turnover is like one of the biggest differences I can think of between this team and what we did in 2019. I felt like in 2019, we would capitalize. When we would win that turnover, we would go down and score and put points on the board. I swear we get a turnover and we're just like, here, have the ball back. We'll punt it right back to you. We don't actually want this. We'd rather play on the defensive side of the ball. It's super frustrating. And I think that cycling more, like, and I also wish that we could have, I was just thinking about this, like, we use Chase as a runner
mm-hmm.
in goal line situations, but like, do we have an athletic option that we could put back there as wildcat formation? Because I was super interested to see because most other teams wouldn't run their quarterback. So the reason why did I bring this up I watched the 7 plays from the goal line from about 18 different angles via YouTube. And the best one I saw was a fan that was recording the whole game in Oregon. It was a very interesting thing, but you look at what Chase had as a runner, and he had end zone if he bounced off of the right side of that block. I think that was the second down, or was it the third down play where he ran it?
Yeah, yeah.
I think there was the third down play. And instead, he ran off of the inside block and ran right into the defender. He had two guys on the outside. He had a tight end, and he had a blocker in front of him. This tight end was sealing the outside of that, which would have put him like, because I know people would say, okay, you see that defender there, he's going to get there. But no, like our tight end was there. He had the right side. I have a hard time believing that a running back wouldn't necessarily see that where a quarterback isn't. And Chase is a great runner. So I don't mean to knock that. It's just a matter of like a running back is going to have the vision for seeing that. Like a Damian Moore would have the vision for seeing that versus a quarterback. Because they've been doing it longer. The game will be slower for them. So,
well, here's the stat that kind of helps you out here. So this is from Hitler Day, who writes for Addicted to Quack. He's probably one of the greatest like football charters and like stat guys I know. Peter and I and Nick were talking on Twitter about play selection and all that. There's a great article that Peter wrote on Right for California that's up. Evans Hall, where it charts like our play tendencies on first, second, and third and fourth down by quarter. It's really good. I highly recommend you read it. It is free too, so please go read it. It's not premium. But here's what Peter was talking about. He said, this is Cal's best play selection by down for non-conference games or non-Sac State games. So all games except for Sac State, right? First down is pass. You have an average yards of 6.3 yards per attempt with a median of 4. Second down is also pass, 6.47 yards per attempt, median of 2. And third down is a chase run, which is 8.7 yards per carry with a median of 2. And on fourth down, it's run with a 4.5 yards per attempt with a median of 4.5. And we were talking about that, and Nick asked, like, curious how many of those chase runs were scrambled versus designed. And this is what Hitladay had to say. Excluding the Sac State game, garbage time, and sacks, this is what Chase's runs are. 14 are designed rushes, 6.4 yards per carry, 7 on third downs. 7 of those came on for third downs, and that's at 7.4 yards per carry. 14 are scrambles, 7.6 yards per carry. 5 of those came on third down, 10.8 yards per carry on third down. If scrambling were a play call, it would be Cal's most effective play through 5 FBS games.
Interesting. Interesting because it's successful with both.
Yeah.
It almost defeats my point.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I don't know what I'm asking for other than to look at things and know that if the margin of error is going to be so small, the difference between that game is, you know, one or two plays.
It's neat. It's Nico catching that touchdown.
I know. It's, yeah, without a doubt.
It's the refs calling Kayvon Thibodeau for offsides when we were inside the three. It's Chase not seeing the right run there. It's Chase not overthrowing Kikoa on the go route. And this, I mean, like Wilcox said that today in his presser where he's like, he was talking about the defense on the two drives that they gave up, you know, touchdowns. But he's like, there isn't really one thing that you can pinpoint to be like, that's the reason that drive was lost. It's we missed tackles, right? We missed leverage. We like didn't account for the quarterback as a runner on certain plays. We also, he was talking about how they rushed four on certain instances and didn't feel the screen and just let that devour the middle of the field. So he was talking about there's just so many aspects. And I think he's right to that certain degree. Like there's not one thing you can point to in this game and be like, that's the reason we lost. But there are enough to be like, damn, like even despite that, like we were close to winning this, but we just couldn't get ourselves over the hump. Like we just couldn't do that's, I think that's the reason Oregon won. Despite having all those like starters out missing and whatever, they just had enough guys and they just made enough plays to get over it. We were one play short every time. One tackle short, one catch short, one throw short. Like we were always just one short. And that's what landed us the loss, not the W.
It's what's landed us almost every loss.
Yeah. It's true. It's true. All right. Are we down to go in some questions, Andy?
Yeah.
Because there's a bunch. I'm going to go down the list. All right. We got our first one. Kind of has to do with the game, so I'm going to start with this one. Scott Morita on Twitter asks, not running once with Brooks. I think he's talking about Christopher Brooks. Near the goal line was surprising. I know Wilcox must rely on the coordinators to call plays, but could you foresee him taking a more active role soon? Decisions from his staff are killing us, and it might be time for change in approach.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You want me to take this or you want to take it?
You go first.
Well, I think you and I are kind of going to be on the same page with this because so we had a chance to talk to Wilcox and people hear us talking about it all the time where we did this like football 101 thing a few years back with him. And in terms of decision making, like he said that he gets analytics calls like, you know, from saying like, oh, you know, if you run here, you're probably going to get like a 30% chance of success or whatnot. And he bases his decisions on those calls, but also sometimes his gut feeling. When he makes those calls between listening to the analytics and listening to his gut, I don't know. But that's there. So he's not decision-making, right? He also kind of alluded to, like, with his coordinators, especially, I'll just talk about the offense, is like he would say, like, hey, if we get a first down here, like, you know, let's go deep. Or if we reach the 50, like, we're going to go four downs, like, to get the first down. Like, he makes those decisions as the head coach. Like, he doesn't leave those decisions up to the coordinators. The actual, like, play call, one, I don't think Wilcox is ever going to take offensive play calling because he's never been an offensive coordinator or an offensive play caller. Defensive play calling, I don't know. I think he has so much on his plate as an offensive coordinator, or a head coach already. I don't know if he's going to want to take that on as well. I don't know. That's my thoughts. What about you?
I think in a different vein, it's tough. I don't know. Let's use the Washington game for an example. You go run, you fumble the ball at the two. Like, I mean, you know, it's just one of those things. Like, sure, maybe you give the ball to Brooks, you get a better result, but you could equally just have a negative result. He was running well, but our offensive line was getting absolutely destroyed. There was nothing that I was watching that our offensive line do that gave me any confidence that running the ball would have been running the ball from like a straight up, like, traditional kind of formation was the play. That's why I'm saying, like, wildcat, something different, something that would have been.
So let me throw off the defense a little bit. Yeah. Cause Kayvon was having his way on the left side of the line and it wasn't even enjoyable to watch as a Cal fan.
I think there's a case to be made, which I've texted you, that we don't execute the RPA very well.
RPO?
Sorry, we use RPAs at work. Yes, RPO. I feel like there have been times this year where who am I to say that if it's an RPO or not? I don't know if it's an actual opportunity, like if it's just a design play, but there was the one play when we had the obvious running hole to the left and it was wide open and Chase kept it. And there was another play in the Oregon game where I just was like, huh? Like, and I remember that being a thing very early on that we would look at and we're like, is this something that we do well? So I think that's the one thing that maybe I'd look at and just be like, is there room for improvement there and decision making and like making the right read. I also think that there's something to be said about, like, yeah, just, I don't know. We just, like, at the end of the day, I don't know. I don't know if Brooks would have made any difference. I'd love to say that he did. He would have. He's obviously a big body and ran well, but without it, absent of an awesome offensive line and absent of going into an absolute like power formation, I'm not so sure that it would have had any success.
Yeah, I think the, like, on third down, basically the QB draw, I think that was the right play because you spread them out and you had a tight end there to extra block. If I'm thinking of it separately, like if we had pulled one of the wide receivers and subbed him in for Christopher Brooks, then the numbers game wouldn't have been in our favor because Kayvon was already eating up one side of the line. And instead of having a DB out wide, we have another DB either inside or a linebacker in there. I don't think the numbers would have been in our favor if we had made that. So I think that's my take on the Christopher Brooks run. But
well said.
Yeah. All right. Bailey, I think this is Sid's younger sister, right? After the Oregon loss, I'm upset, but I'm proud of how well the offense and the defense played. What games do you believe are winnable? What can the offense and defense still improve on?
I love this game.
I
think every game is winnable.
I think I honestly believe every game for the rest of what is it? Someone put out, was it on some Twitter account, like some aggregator Twitter account put out that Cal has the third easiest schedule remaining in the entire country. So it's there. We play Arizona and Colorado, the two teams probably that everyone would rank below Cal in the Pac-12.
Yeah.
So yeah, at least two. The three California schools look beatable.
They all look beatable. There's none of the three look daunting. So it's a matter of execution, as Andy would put it.
Oregon State is the hardest opponent we have left.
Probably, yeah. They're the ones that are playing the best. Yep. I mean, did you see the Colorado-Arizona score at one point last week? It was 20-0 at one point. Colorado was up, right? Not a single offensive touchdown had been scored. 20-0 and dude, not a single offensive touchdown.
Saturday is going to be nuts. If it rains, which it's 60% probability right now.
It's the neutral factor. Like anything is game when there's weather involved. The monsoon game against Oregon.
Yeah.
Like the our freshman year in 07, the SC game in the rain. Anything is possible. Anything is possible. Hell, we could even get another shootout. We can get like another Colorado, the Jared Goff shootout, right?
No way.
Was it 53-54, something like that? Yeah.
I think, what does the offense and defense have to improve upon? I thought tackling was better. Just the one thing that I miss has been the same thing all year. All right, so is Drayden was the one that was isolated outside on the QB touchdown run, the Anthony.
Yep.
Yeah, so like when on that play, I felt like Drayden, who's amazing and has made those tackles before, instead of keeping the offensive player in front of him and waiting for help, tried to make the tackle in isolation. And the problem with that is if it goes wrong, you give up the score. And if it goes well, you're a hero. But obviously, like, I think Wilcox is a coach that kind of tries to avoid the hero plays and goes for the ones where the more predictable plays. So I would have liked to see that one be, hey, I'm just going to make sure, like, no matter what, like, I'm here. My teammates are going to come help. I'm not going to let you get in the end zone, versus what ended up happening, hindsight being in my benefit. But that's the number one thing for me with the defense, is just continuing to kind of focus on those fundamentals of stand the player up, swarm, stand the player up, swarm, stand the player up, swarm. And that's what I miss from our past defenses. On the offensive side of the ball, I think we covered it, you know, to be fair, and I don't want to repeat. So, but that's what I would look for going forward. And I think establishing the run game against Colorado, that's going to be a big piece, knowing that the elements will be in play.
All right, next one's from Sid. She says, this loss really hurts, but I thought the defense played way better. I think we all agree. But I'm confused about the play calls on the last drive. Also, Chase missed Crawford a second time in the end zone. Were you both content on the last play calls? What would you have called? So the only play that I'm curious about is the actual final play, like that fourth down play. That's the only one, because we never got to see the play actually develop or like happen, right? It just he just threw it as he went down, and it was like I mean, with the one play we haven't talked about, like, then we gotta clap it off to, was Chase keeping the drive alive with that shovel pass. Like, good Lord, like that was incredible heads up play. And then the Oregon guy's like all like pointing, saying he was down, but he's like clearly not down. He's like a foot above the ground. But man, that was such an impressive play to keep the drive alive. But then, yeah,
that play was insane.
Yeah, it was absolutely insane. So the last one is the last play is the one that I'm curious about. And Wilcox has talked about this, about how the closer you get to the end zone, the harder it is to execute a pass play, because you just don't have the space that you can generate with like route concepts. So I don't know. I think they tried to go spread, and they tried to give maybe a Chase a running lane of 3 yards to get into the end zone, but they held Pat. And as you said, you know, they went cover zero and they didn't execute. So everyone was man to man and just could not get an opening. And I think that's the thing that Hithliday said when I was interviewed on Addicted to Quack, was just like, the receivers are good, but none of them actually get good separation. And that can only sustain you for so long. Like, how many 50-50 balls are you going to come down with? Like, at some point, 50-50 balls aren't going to go your way. And that's kind of what it is, where Chase didn't throw to anybody. Well, he did throw to someone, but that was because he was under duress and he had to get the ball away. But there wasn't anyone to throw to, which means that there wasn't separation and it was man-to-man coverage. So, like, that's just one of the things that will just... I don't know what play call would have done it. Like, if the... Because the coaches, you and I aren't football coaches. The coaches are football coaches. So they know what plays can break a cover zero. And if they read it as a cover zero and they call the play to break it, but the execution's not there, I don't know what other play there could have been to do that. Like,
that's exactly what I was going to say. That's it. It's like, if you, I think that is so illuminating that he was, and it was such an honest answer. Yeah. Because post-game Wilcox doesn't give anything besides honest answers and angry ones at that. And it was, we knew what the play was. We had the play called to beat it, and we didn't execute. Can you ask for a different play call? Doesn't matter. They already had the one that they knew would beat it. Yeah. So it's like, I don't know. It was so confusing, but if you're going to let three dudes in within a matter of 2 seconds, it's going to be... You know, I don't know if someone's supposed to leak out, if you're doing that on purpose, you know, one of those, kind of like a screen, like let them get back there and then you open it up and you get create space. But whatever it was, it didn't look, there's no semblance of nervousness that anyone had after watching that unfold from the Oregon side.
Yeah. That was that. All right. We got a couple more questions. Ryan asks, with Cal cash strapped due to their own missteps, like giving Wilcox an extension when he hadn't earned one on that magnitude, is there a way they could even afford a decent replacement while paying another buyout? And thus, is Troy Taylor the top option because of that? All right. So if you want to play out that scenario just a tad bit, and I'm just, we're answering questions, so we got to answer it right. Fair square. Fair is fair. Though on the record, both of us do not think that Wilcox will be fired, nor is he on the real hot seat right now. It's a little, maybe a little warm, but it's not like a hot seat. Yeah, I don't know. I don't think so. I mean, we've talked about that on our podcast with Nam and Nick. It's just like, can you ask the same donors to buy out a football coach and a basketball coach in the same year? Like, I just don't see that happening. And like Nick's thing, you know, that he pointed out was like, you scrutinize based on how much he's getting paid and what he's delivering. We're paying middle of the conference. We're getting middle of the conference. Until we start paying higher than middle of the conference, I don't think you can expect better, right? From like who can we hire coaching pool? And then as Dam said too, like institutionally, there are certain people we're not going to hire. Like we're not hiring Urban Meyer. We're not hiring Ed Orgeron. We're not hiring Art Briles. Like we're not hiring Hugh Freeze. Like there's a lot of coaches out there that maybe we can get on the cheap, but institutionally we would never do it. And that's kind of, and thus is Troy Taylor the top option? Probably. But I mean, here's my rebuttal to that is, if Troy Taylor wasn't a Cal coach or a Cal player, would he even be on the Cal radar? Like just judging from his football, like what he's done, like just because he was Utah's OC for a year, like you think that puts him, I'm not like rhetorically asking that. I'm like genuinely asking the person. It's like, is that a good enough qualification to put him on the Cal radar? I don't know. I don't think he would be on the want list for a lot of people, just judging from like his win losses and stuff, if he wasn't a Cal quarterback.
Riverboat Ron, baby.
Yeah. Riverboat Ron. That's the only saving grace.
I don't know. I think if he's just so shot, like $7 million. And if you're going to ask me as an AD, which is the bigger problem to solve, just wait till you see basketball attendance numbers. just wait till you see those things. So, yeah, the biggest problem is going to showcase itself here in about a month. And that's the one that I would solve
first. We got one more question for us before we got to go. is Shavit Karen asks us, what can be done to save recruiting?
I was excited. I saw this one and was excited for it. So give me a second. I'm just going to look it up. But so let's look at our 2022.
It's not great. It's not great. Like, Justin Martin's loss, Caleb Johnson's loss, and Jay Knott's loss does not help right now.
58 nationally, ninth in the Pac-12.
Yeah, so not great.
0.86. Look, Sonny mainly recruited at the 58 national, you know? I just don't, like, look, my thoughts on it with recruiting are, if you're gonna bomb one, fine, bomb this year. because you had such a good class last year, you're set. Like, you did the work. You got that class. But the thing that gives me hope here is look at Oregon State. Oregon State has fielded a great team without having to have great recruiting. You look at Utah, they've done something similar. Their recruiting has gotten better, but we have coaches that can recruit. You can still recruit for a program that has one win. You can recruit for a program that has three wins. We have the number one public university in the world behind it. You're never going to lose that brand. So how far? Your bottom is capped, and that's the beautiful thing about it. You're always going to have appeal to go to Cal because of the education and being in the Bay Area and being in one of the most innovative places in the entire world with some of the best weather in the entire world. So you have that at its core. I just don't look at recruiting like it's this thing that is going to all of a sudden be, you know, 100, 120. And you have up years, you have down years. Like, to me, we can sustain this. And we have coaches that can recruit to reverse that. So I'm not that worried. My biggest hope, which is the optimist in me and dangerous, is that this forces us to be creative and go up and go out and find the people that are the diamond in the rough type players that become Evan Weavers, that become these guys that, like Jordan Kanasich, that we never expected to blossom into the player that they became. Devontae Downs, like, I know Nam loved him, called him out, like, all these guys Nam knows, but like, the average person doesn't look at that recruit and is like, that guy's gonna be really good. And I think, like, so I thought about this a lot and just sort of arrived at this place where I'm like, I'm very much at peace with it, because I don't think the bottom is, like, the bottom of a season is much lower than where I think our bottom of recruiting can go. If we go 2-10, everyone's going to feel really bad about that season. But recruiting will probably be where it is right now. That's my guess. I don't see it as going much lower than that.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, we haven't seen any defensive players decommit. The only players that have decommitted are three offensive players. And there's still a lot of time to get in. The only, if you're starting to panic and you're getting a little, if you're into the weeds about recruiting, the only concern I would have is we have a running backs coach who's been here for 2 years now and has not gotten a single running back in the door. That would be concerning, but there's still time, is what I'm saying, right? Like, we lost our only quarterback recruit and we've offered some other guys, but we need to get in another quarterback because we're most likely going to have a quarterback battle next year and we need the competition. So there's that. Like, Burl Toller is probably the only guy that you could look on probably the offensive side and go, his job is the safest because of the guys he's pulled in and the guys that he's brought in. J. Mike, Jeremiah Hunter, right? Kekoa, Nico, like all these guys that have started to develop over the last couple of years and play really, really well. Jeremiah Hunter is like the key point, right? J. Michael Sturdivant also, like, judging from Instagram, does not have a cast on his arm anymore. So it could be that we see him a lot sooner than later. And Musgraves also alluded to the fact that some of these younger guys are looking like they're ready to play now. So
I mean, granted, I thought that they were going to play in the Oregon game, but maybe that's a little too much to drop them into their first game at Autzen. So maybe this week's the week. Maybe this week is the week against the not that great of a team where you can throw on some of the younger talent and see if they can sink or swim. And we start to explode. Like, you know, Jermaine Terry's like started to show up on the Cal Football social media like handles. I don't want to read too many tea leaves, but
I know the era is coming, man. The era is upon us. And the other thing too is like the transfer portal at, you know, at the, in this era is huge, is way different than it's ever been. You can add a lot of talent that way as well.
But we just we also just don't know what talent's available in the portal right now. We actually probably won't know that until what, like after spring ball. Because that's when a lot of guys like see that they're not going to be in the depth chart for the following year, and that's when they bounce. So, like, case in point, UCLA picked up Zach Charbonnet from Michigan, and look how he's turned out. So, we just need to find a couple of those. Maybe add a quarterback through the portal and see where that goes. But, yeah, that's pretty much it. That's going to be it for us here on the California Golden Bearcast. You can follow us on Twitter at Golden Bearcast. You can follow us on the interwebs on all your podcasting places, networks. And just remember, you can find most of our written stuff at RectorCalifornia.com. A lot of things have been going up this week. Of course, if you're listening to this before the Colorado game, there will be a Colorado preview podcast with someone from Run Ralphie Report later in the week. But outside of that, that's it. And from myself and Indy, as always, go Bears.
See you Saturday. Go Bears.